Okay, so today I'm going to leave the topological field theory story and talk about brains in rational conformal field theories. It's going to be very, very simple stuff. I hope I don't bore you all to tears. I'll begin with some motivations. And then I'll formulate the basic formalism, ishibashi, cardi, etc., just to say how you look at boundary states in rational conformal field theories. I'll give some free field examples just to get the idea very clearly across, and then I'll go to WCW examples, and that leads to some interesting questions about D0 charges, and finally, if there's time, and there probably won't be, I'll talk about gauged WCW examples. And most of what I'm going to say is review of very standard and well-worn material. Any new insights that I happen to mention are due to a collaboration with Juan Maldacena and Nadi Zeiberg in a paper 0105038 and some paper or two to appear. Okay, let me say something about motivation. So our theme has been the classification of D-brains. And in the first two talks, we made a drastic simplification to topological field theory, to the topological field theory. But we did succeed, at least in the semi-simple case, in classifying those D-brains. And we found that even at that level, K-theory was a natural classification tool. Now, we'd like to do better. We'd like to go to honest conformal field theory. But this is too hard, because basically, what is an on-shell D-brain? An on-shell D-brain is a local conformally invariant boundary condition. And so we can't hope to classify such things with present-day technology. So again, we make a retreat, and we retreat to what are called rational conformal field theories, where there's a lot more structure and a lot more symmetry to help us. And moreover, we don't consider all brains in rational conformal field theories. We consider so-called symmetry-preserving brains. And I will define that term. So that's a particularly nice class of brains. And here we have a lot more control over what we're doing. For example, even at the closed string level, there's a conjectural classification. And to make a long story short, the idea is that basically, all rational conformal field theories are derived from WZW theory for compact Lie groups by a finite set of procedures which I'm not going to go into, but a finite set of well-defined procedures applied to WZW models for compact groups should give you an arbitrary rational conformal field theory. So therefore, basically, you're in good shape if you understand brains, symmetry-preserving brains in WZW models. Pardon? Precisely. Now, in the case of rational conformal field theory, there is indeed already a nice, in some sense, complete theory of the symmetry-preserving brains. And it's due to a lot of people. Let me just list a few of the names. There's, of course, the classic paper of Cardi. There are some papers by Sognati and collaborators. There's a long series of papers by Fuchs and Schweigert and collaborators. Recknagel and Schomerus and collaborators. And there's a nice set of papers by Berend, Pierce, Petkova, and Zuber. And many other people have contributed to this theory. But as anyone who's looked at rational conformal field theory knows, the formalism gets very, very algebraic and somewhat opaque. And what we'd like to do is we want to understand some of the how geometry is associated to these symmetry-preserving brains. And so the goal of this lecture is to derive semi-classical geometric pictures of the WZW brains, symmetry-preserving brains. I'll drop that term sometimes. And use this to explore the moduli spaces of brains. Now, you could ask, how does this fit in my general theme of D-brains and K-theory? And the reason I'm discussing this is twofold. First of all, K-theory should be related to the components of these moduli spaces. And we'd like to see how that works. So these brains come in moduli spaces, but these moduli spaces have components, and we might expect K-theory to say something about the components. And the second is that the WZW model has a non-torsion H-flux. So if I have a WZW model for a continuous compact group G, then I can look at the third integral cohomology group of G, and let's let X3 be a generator for that. Then the WZW model has an H flux, which is an integer K times X3. Well, suppose G is simple. And already back in Witten's paper on K-theory and D-brains, he suggested that in the presence of H-flux, KH of X on a spacetime X was the correct classification group. Now, his arguments most definitely applied, and he stressed this, when H is torsion. And then further evidence and further arguments in for the validity of that were given in subsequent paper by Friedenwitten and a nice paper of Kapustin. Again, the arguments of those papers applied when H is torsion. Now, Balknecht and Matai suggested that when H is non-torsion, this is still the right group to use. And however, it's not completely obvious that that's the right answer. And what we'd like to do is we'd like to explore that. So the WZW models, being solvable models, are an ideal place to try and explore that possibility. And quite generally, we want to know more about brains in non-trivial Ramon and Nevers-Schwartz fluxes. And there's a whole host of questions there, an interesting phenomenon. And this is important both for fundamental questions about what are deep brains, what's the connection to M theory, and so on. And it's also relevant to phenomenological issues, because there are interesting compactifications with non-trivial fluxes, and one wants to know about brains in that case. Okay, so that concludes my motivation. So now I'm going to talk about the basic formalism. I mean, many of you will know this extremely well, but I think I still have to explain it, because I can't assume everybody knows it. Yeah? Okay, what, sorry? Oh, sorry. I'm not used to this. Arr. Okay. Yeah. Did I hear?
So in your previous discussion, you considered the brains or these boundary conditions to be a category.
Yeah.
And now you're talking about them as a moduli space. So what's changed?
Quite a lot has changed. So in contrast to the crystal clear mathematical structure that we had in the first two lectures, we're now going into physics. Okay, and one could try and axiomatize everything a la Graham Segal in terms of a functor depending on the conformal structure and say, what are the brains in that case? And, well, one thing I can guarantee is that any good notion of brains is going to come in continuous families. And maybe they probably should still be thought of as objects in a category. But exactly how that all works and what's the good mathematical structure in this case that we really want to do, I don't know. But I'm going to show you brains where it's obvious that any reasonable person would say there's a moduli space of these brains. Okay. So I'm not going, sorry?
Well, in the rational conformal field theory case, we might imagine, for example, there's an associated three-dimensional topological field.
Absolutely, yes. And that's an interesting, definitely an interesting way to start thinking about the problem. Okay, so part two is basic formalism. So, as in two-dimensional, so recall that in the 2D TFT case, we had a boundary condition was an element of this set of objects, which was a group, and to that we could associate a state, B sub A, in the closed string sector. Well, now what we're going to do is something similar. A is again going to label a boundary condition. And now what we're going to associate to it is a state in the closed state space of the RCFT. Okay, and the definition is pretty much the same definition as it was before. If we think of the CFT with a boundary condition A, so we're talking about CFT on the upper half plane, and we insert some vertex operators, at some positions on the upper half plane, then to this boundary condition A, we wish to associate a state in the closed string state space such that the correlation functions on the upper half plane are simply the closed string correlation functions of these vertex operators. Now, the double ket is there to warn you that this is not an honest state. It's not normalizable. It's not something that you would normally write down when you write down the WZW model in terms of the primary state and a finite number of descendants operators acting on the primary state. It's definitely outside that class, and that double ket serves as a warning. I'll talk about that, Hirose. You know that very well. Sorry? That this is equal to the correlators on the upper half plane. And when I say I give a boundary condition, that means that I have some notion of computing the correlation functions on the upper half plane. And I agree I'm not being very precise about that statement. Sorry? Well, of course you do. In the upper half plane, you have open strings moving that way. That's how you should think of the open strings. Yeah, and in particular, I'm talking about AA boundary conditions. Indeed, I could change them. Now, so what are we going to do here? We're going to discuss symmetry-preserving boundary conditions. Okay, and then we're going to write concrete formulas. For B sub A. Okay, and then we'll associate, this is the point that's slightly new, we'll associate manifolds in space-time to these states, and that will only be in a semi-classical limit, and manifolds with bundle in general. And then we'll explore their moduli space. Yeah. Yeah. Well. Right. So it's exactly the same picture as in the as in the topological field theory. Maybe this picture will help you. I have a boundary condition A on the boundary of the disk. Okay, and in my earlier discussion, remember that I had a free boundary A sitting on the side of a with closed string vertex operators, and this was equal to the insertion of a state called B sub A with closed string vertex operators. I'm not sure that answers your question very clearly. I'm simply asserting that there is a state in the closed string state space, which I like to think of as the, well, I was very precise in the topological field theory. And so maybe I'll remind you of that. So that was the open to closed transition map applied to the unit of the open sector. Okay, and that was B sub A.
Surface line to hit the boundary.
That's right.
How many do you have?
I have one turquoise line with boundary condition A.
And the left line on the left picture, we have one or two?
We have one line because we have the real line here, and a infinity is included as one point.
The zero is not like side line.
Maybe you want a vertical string.
So I'm saying that this can be replaced by a state at the origin of the plane, which I'll call B sub A, with these vertex operators. I'm not quite sure what you're asking.
The point on the boundary is where the vector.
Well, you mean here?
Yeah, here.
What about SL2R invariance? I mean, you can. Fine. Well, I didn't think I'd get into trouble at this point. I'm sorry to confuse you. What I'd like to do is I'd like to study what I'm going to call boundary states. And I'm going to say what it means for a boundary state to be symmetry preserving. And I'm not really going to use the equality to this picture very much. It was just meant to be motivation. Well, actually, that's a lie. I am going to use it. I will define what I mean to be a symmetry-preserving boundary state, and if you don't like this picture, you can at least accept the formulas I'll give for the symmetry-preserving boundary state. Okay, so in fact, that's what's coming right now. I want to talk about symmetry-preserving boundary conditions. So, what symmetry? So, the first important symmetry, of course, is Virasoro symmetry. So H closed is a representation of Virasoro left plus Virasoro right, and I'll use tildes for the right movers. Okay. Now, the presence of this boundary, that's why I lied. I am going to use this picture here. The presence of this boundary breaks the invariance, the boundary, breaks the invariance to a single Virasoro algebra. Okay, and in terms of the boundary state, we have the following equation. T of z minus T tilde of z bar, these are the stress energy tensors, acting on B sub A equals 0 at imaginary part of z equals 0. Now, I want to analyze that equation. That's my first goal. Okay. So let me rewrite the same equation trivially in terms of the modes of the Virasoro algebra. Okay. For all n in z. And so So this is a well-defined problem, even if you don't like the picture. This is a well-defined problem. I have a representation of Virasoro left plus Virasoro right. So I have LNs and LN tildes. And I wish to solve this linear equation for state in the closed string space. That is minus n. And actually, it's not trivial. Well, it is trivial, but it's a few steps to check that this is that this is a compatible set of equations. Because the Virasoro algebra has a central extension. And with this minus n, remember, it's odd in n. And so you'll get the central extensions canceling out. So you can indeed impose this condition for all values of n, not just for half. Okay. So what are the solutions of this equation? And that's a theorem which actually was discovered in a misguided attempt to write closed string field theory, which goes like this. Let V sub H be the irrep of Virasoro, and, well, if you like, Virasoro left, and V tilde H be the irrep of Virasoro right. Of course, they're isomorphic algebras. Then I can decompose H closed into the irreducible representation. So I can write that as a sum over H and H tilde in the so-called spectrum of the theory of VH tensor V tilde H tilde. Or in terms of the isotypical components over H and H tilde in R plus of something I could call the degeneracy space tensor VH tensor V tilde H tilde. Again, tilde always just means right mover. Okay. So the theorem says that then the space of conformally invariant boundary states has a basis for each H equals H tilde in the spectrum. Pardon? So there's a basis vector, in other words, there's a basis vector. There's a basis in one-to-one correspondence with spinless Virasoro primaries. Okay, which are called Ishibashi states. In other words, the span of the conformally invariant boundary states is the sum over H of DHH. Is the statement clear? Okay. Now, there's an elegant proof of this, which I learned a long time ago from Friedan, which I think is actually illuminating, especially in view of some of the current work on split string field theory. So let me give it. Yeah.
In a rational theory, do we always have H equal H tilde?
Definitely not. No. And this will generalize, as I'll mention, this will generalize fairly straightforwardly to rational theories. So VH has an invariant inner product. Okay. So I'm going to use an isomorphism VH with VH dual. And in concrete terms, if I act with descendants on a primary state, I simply map that to H times Li. So using that isomorphism, I... Oh yeah, absolutely. So I is an ordered, L minus I is L minus I1 through L minus IP for some peak tuple, then L plus I will be L IP through L plus I1. Okay. So H closed then is the sum over H, H tilde in the spectrum of VH tensor VH tilde dual. Okay. Using that, this is an isomorphism. And now I'm going to use the fact that the Virasoro left is isomorphic to the Virasoro right. And so I'm going to say, oh, but that's the sum over H, H tilde in the spectrum of HUM of VH tilde into VH. And under these isomorphisms, what happens to my conformal invariance condition on the boundary state? Well, what happens is that under these isomorphisms, the boundary state goes to an element I'll call phi sub b in this space, and the conformal invariance condition says that phi sub b is an intertwiner. Having chosen an isomorphism between the left and right Virasoro algebras, I now have a single Virasoro algebra in the game, but the conformal invariance condition says that phi sub b is an intertwiner with the Virasoro representation. Now this means that we can apply Schur's lemma. V sub h is an irreducible representation. Oh, and I shouldn't be erasing what I'm erasing, because that's the conclusion. Phi sub b is therefore a sum. Well, what does that mean? First of all, we can only have a non-zero intertwiner when H tilde is equal to H. And moreover, each time H tilde equals H, for each such primary field in the theory, we must have phi sub b proportional to the identity matrix on that component. So phi sub b is of this form, HH in the spectrum, some operator on the degeneracy space, I don't care, times 1 on the unit on V sub H. And now I can be explicit about this. For each primary field in the theory, we have a so-called Ishibashi state. That concludes the proof of the theorem, but let's continue developing it. For each primary field in the theory, I have a so-called Ishibashi state, which is a sum over descendants, maybe. Let me call the descendants capital I, but I should use an orthonormal basis for the Virasoro representation. The I on the left is for Ishibashi. These n's are simply some enumeration of an orthonormal basis. Think of going up in the descendants in the Virasoro left times Virasoro right representation. So here I've gone back. I've used this identification with HOM spaces to show you why it's so clear that you have to have one state for each spinless primary. But now I've gone back and I've told you what this basis of so-called Ishibashi states is. Yeah.
Therefore, it's much more useful to think of, instead of thinking about this boundary state, which is not really in the state space of the theory, it's much better to think about this phi b, an honest operator,
I don't know how honest it is, because you see, this is the unit operator on all of, well, the unit operator exists, I agree. But if you try to take its trace or something, you'll get into trouble.
Well,
I'm about to do something that does make sense, that's a substitute for the normalizability of this, which Hirose was just alluding to a moment ago. It exists as an operator. Yeah, I completely agree with that. So these things exist as operators, but don't call them trace class operators or anything like that. So you have to be careful if you want to start computing amplitudes with them. But what you can do is what Hirose was just alluding to, and I'll do that right now. Even though this is manifestly a badly normalized state, I can, of course, introduce the Hamiltonian, and consider an overlap of H with QC to the 1/2 H plus H twiddle H prime. These are ishy. And this is delta H H prime. Well, it should be obvious from this formula that it's delta H H prime times the character of the irreducible representation. Now, these, although conformally invariant, do not satisfy good locality properties, as we'll see in a second when I discuss the Cardy condition. So they're not analogous, really, to the boundary states, although they're a basis of solutions. They're a basis of solutions to this equation. They're not analogous to the boundary states I had in my topological field theory story, because they do not satisfy good sewing properties. Okay, and one way of detecting that is the Cardy condition, which I'll come to in a second. But before I do come to that, I do want to generalize this theorem, the character basis theorem, to arbitrary chiral algebras. Okay, so let me do that now. So now I have an RCFT with chiral algebra A left plus A right tilde, and we're going to assume that they're both isomorphic to a single chiral algebra. And the example you should have in mind is A is generated. The key example is generated by currents in an affine Lie algebra of level k. So my currents are Ja of z, Jna z to the minus n minus 1. And then they generate an operator, a holomorphic operator product algebra, which is chiral algebra. So I'm excluding at this point heterotic theories, but that's for simplicity. OK, so again, the decomposition of the closed space with respect to the irreps of this bigger chiral algebra looks just the same, of course. And by definition, a symmetry-preserving brain will be a boundary state, B, preserving some diagonal subalgebra. Of A left plus A right. But now there's an important new point. A can have automorphisms. Omega. Okay, so when I say some diagonal subalgebra, what I mean is a diagonal subalgebra of the form JNA plus omega J minus N tilde A acting on B is 0 for all N and A in the finite dimensional Lie algebra. Because omega is an automorphism, this is a well-defined set of conditions. I actually have a plus sign here. You might want to check that it should be a plus sign and not a minus sign. The plus or the minus sign is connected with the parity of the spin of the chiral algebra. And different choices of omega are going to lead to very different brains. Are people with me? Are there any questions? Yeah? Okay. All right. Now, at this point, the character basis theorem is pretty obvious. It generalizes what I said for the Virasoro case in exactly the same way. Oh yeah, I keep forgetting. So let's call that equation star. Mm-hmm. Why not? You could, and that's right. The symmetry will be broken, but you could still consider such d-brains, and you can compute, and you can look at their open string spectrum, and all of that, and it's interesting. So. The generalization is clear. A basis of solutions of star is given by I equals omega of J tilde, where I and J tilde is in the spectrum. And for every such pair, we have an Ishibashi state, which is by definition one tensor omega applied to n I n tensor I, oops, j tilde n tilde, where we sum again over an orthonormal basis. And the overlap of two weighted with q so that it's finite is delta I j times the irreducible times the character of the corresponding irreducible representation. Now, as I was saying before, these states do not satisfy good locality properties. And the clearest way of doing that is revealed by Cardy's condition. So Cardy's condition is very closely related to the double twist diagram I showed you before. And it was the double twist diagram which showed us that the correct boundary states, defined as I define them precisely by saying that the open string correlators with boundary condition A is just a correlator in the closed string theory, those boundary states, I remind you, were iota upper A, 1 sub A, which was a sum over spacetime of integers times the basic idempotence over the square root of theta x. Okay? So they weren't just any old state in the conformal field theory. They were very special states. And the same is true here in the conformal field theory case. So my pseudo definition is that a Cardy state is a boundary state with good locality properties. And it's a pseudo definition because I'm not telling you what good is. But good, roughly speaking, should mean that we have a coherent set of operator product expansions in the bulk, together with operator product expansions on the boundary, D together with operator product expansions on, of the bulk to the boundary together with operator product expansions on the boundary. These correspond to multiplication in C, iota lower star, and multiplication in O. And just as there were conditions in the topological field theory, there are more complicated conditions, a bunch of pentagon conditions and things like that, for operator product expansions in rational control field theory. Now, that's something I don't want to go too deeply into. But there's a powerful and famous necessary condition, which certainly illustrates some of what I mean by good, which is the Cardy condition, which is the following. We consider, so we'll denote a Cardy state by alpha, and so we consider this overlap. And that will be the propagation of closed strings from state beta here to state alpha here, time going that way. Well, if I think of that as a cylinder with time going that way, the idea is that I should also be able to think of time going that way by a modular transformation. And so this function of TC must be equal to the trace in some space, H alpha beta, I'll say more about it in a second, of Q open to the H, where Q open is e to the 2 pi I tau open. Tau open is minus 1 over tau closed, and Q closed is e to the 2 pi I tau closed. So Cardy requires that this well-defined function of tau c under a modular transformation must be not only a trace in a Hilbert space, but a sum, an integral sum of characters of the preserved symmetry algebra. Okay, so mathematicians are probably going to find that totally mysterious. Is the statement at least clear? Mathematicians, speak up. I'm doing this for you. This is a condition on the set of, absolutely, on the set of what I want to call local local boundary states. Well, I mean, it's already non-trivial to put alpha here and alpha here.
Okay.
Yeah, that's true. That's not, I don't think that's so clear in the conformal field theory. It's still definitely being imposed. So I like to define what I would call a Cardy set to be a set of boundary states, alpha, such that this is true. I actually think that you can get into trouble that way, that you can have a maximal Cardy set and that you can impose a, you can have another alpha that you try to add to your set and doesn't give you integers. Just with level one current algebra for fermions. I don't recall the details off the top of my head. Yeah? I'm about to make it do examples, but yeah. Yeah. Pardon? Oh, I'm going to go through examples to illustrate all this formalism. Yeah.
Is it possible to have two different Cardy sets, each of which are mutually
exclusive? I don't know. I think that's an open question. I think that's a very interesting open question.
Example, right? You take this one set, the Cardy state by itself.
No, I didn't say that was maximal.
Okay.
Well, I don't, Anton, I don't know the answer to this. This Ashok's question is, I think, a very interesting question. Could there be two inequivalent Cardi sets, maximal Cardi sets?
But you already said that in the example. You just take this extra.
No, because it wasn't maximal.
No, take the maximal Cardi set thing, the definition of something.
Yes, and now I recall that I wasn't quite sure about that example. Sorry. I'm going through the process I went through before. I asked myself this question. I thought I had a counterexample, and then I remember there was something wrong with it. So I just don't know the answer to this question. I don't know the answer to your question, and I don't know the answer to Ashok's question. And I think it's an interesting question.
Another question kind of along those lines.
Yeah.
Is like compatibility.
Right.
A and B.
Yeah.
A is compatible with B, and B is compatible with C. Is A compatible with C?
No, I don't think it's obvious. I mean, let me say what I know about solutions of these conditions. Maybe it will be obvious to you. What is known about solutions to these conditions? Yeah.
Did you assume the rational conformal field theory for that field in that field?
And yes, absolutely. Now, the statement of that theorem assumes that I've got a rational conformal field theory. Nevertheless, the character basis theorem for the Virasoro algebra is true for any theory. Okay, maybe that's what you're getting at. So even when C is bigger than 1, if you just want to ask what is a basis of states that preserves conformal invariance, answer. It's spanned by the spinless Virasoro primaries, even when C is bigger than 1. The problem is how to combine those into good boundary states that satisfy local boundary conditions. The problem is twofold. First of all, you need to think about the S matrix on the characters, the Virasoro characters, where C is bigger than 1. And then you're going to get a continuous spectrum of H's under the modular transformation, and those need not be in the actual spectrum of the closed string theory. So it's proceeding this way in the non-rational case is not a very good thing to do, or at least no one's made any progress that way. Okay. Maybe I will answer some of the questions that people are having at this point by telling you about a set of solutions to these Cardi constraints. So, okay, so the modular transformation, so the characters have good modular transformation properties. So we have this statement. We also know a basis of the symmetry preserving states. So without loss of generality, we can certainly say that alpha is equal to a sum over j of some coefficients over the square root of s1j times the Ishibashi state. That's just because they do form a basis. The size are unknown complex numbers, and the square root of s1j down there is just a convenient normalization. Okay. So now it's a straightforward exercise. Plug that expansion for alpha and beta into the overlap up there. You'll expand that out. You'll get something quadratic in the size times characters with evaluated on QC. Now do the modular transformation and set it equal to the corresponding sum of characters here. And what you discover is that n upper k alpha beta is the sum over j of psi alpha j psi beta j star over s1j sjk. So that's the Cardi condition for n k alpha beta positive integers. Now, one solution, very famous solution, is Cardes. He observes that if we put psi alpha j equal to the modular S matrix itself, then nk alpha beta is indeed a positive set of integers by the Philander formula. Zuber et al. Make a very interesting statement, which is more general. If we put a completeness condition on psi alpha j, then solutions are in 1-1 correspondence with representations of the fusion rule algebra by positive integer matrices. I don't remember it off the top of my head, but it is something a little bit like this. They have a condition like that that they have to impose. And then they have a theorem that to find the size satisfying this Cardes condition is to find a positive integer matrix representation of the fusion rule algebra. Okay, let me get to Wadi's point, to what Wadi was asking. I'd like to give you some examples of all this formalism. Yeah. You think given a closed string, there should be a unique set of the brains in the theory?
Yeah,
I agree.
Then the condition you are designing is
not one bound. So it's very Hiroshi, I completely agree with you. That's why I think it's an interesting question. Because it would be a very unexpected phenomenon to have two different maximal sets of brains given a closed string theory. What?
It could be that you just impose Cardes condition by itself.
Oh, well, that's an interesting issue you're raising. now, in the same paper of Zuber et al., they actually do look through the full set of consistency conditions for the operator product expansions, bulk-bulk, boundary-boundary, and bulk-boundary. And there's a set of pentagon relations. And what they show is that the basic data in the operator product expansions can be expressed in terms of that of the underlying rational conformal field theory. So in particular, there's a fusion matrix for boundary vertex operators, which turns out to be related closely to that for the bulk operators. And there's a boundary to bulk fusion matrix, which turns out to be related to the modular transformation matrices for the various one-point functions in the theory, and they show that the old relations that Nadi and I had for the latter data imply the consistency conditions of the bulk and boundary. So that means the Cardes condition is very powerful. It would seem that that is not only necessary but sufficient in the rational case. Yeah.
You're saying for the Cardes solution,
it's just what I said. It's not obvious, but my understanding of what their paper is that in fact it's not only necessary but sufficient. At least for diagonal theories, they're careful about that.
Suppose I have this problem with the problem. Will we show that any solution is not necessarily the Cardes solution?
I think that's what I just said.
But the Cardes solution is, okay, the Cardes condition is sensitive only to the spinless diagrams, right? So we have two defined bulk-bulk pictures, the same spinless diagram set, but different.
But you're also assuming the symmetry. So you're done once you've said what the spectrum. Oh, I'm sorry, that's not quite right. No. Yeah. Okay. They are careful about saying that they're dealing with the diagonal modular invariant. Okay, so that was supposed to be 10 minutes or so. I didn't anticipate the reaction of the audience. Let's do some free field examples. That's another 5 minutes. because it would be nice to get to the brain graphing conjugacy classes. So let's start out with WZW theory for group G equals R to the D. Now, someone will say that's not compact. That's true. It's not compact, but it is free field theory, and it illustrates some of what we're going to do in a sort of manifestly clear way. So the fields are maps into this target. The current is just this. So we're doing U1 to the D is our chiral algebra. So Ji of Z, Jj of W is minus delta Ij over Z minus W squared, plus and so on. What are the representations? The representations are labeled by P in the dual space. And the irreducible representations are just Fock vacua with Fock basis P. And the characters, chi sub P, are Q to the 1/2 P squared over eta to the D. And the modular transformation matrix is chi P of tau C is equal to the integral dx of e to the I px, let me call it chi x, of tau open. So the modular transformation is just Fourier transform. Now, the closed state, the closed space is a diagonal modular invariant. And what are the automorphisms of the chiral algebra? Well, the automorphisms are omega takes ji goes to rik jk, r is constant in z, and must preserve the operator product expansion, so r squared is 1, r is a element of ODR. Okay, so what are the so given such an omega, what are the symmetry preserving boundary conditions? Alpha n minus r times alpha tilde minus n on the boundary state is 0 for all n. Okay? Now, r squared being 1, we can choose a basis in which p1 through pn has r equals plus 1, and another basis, the same basis, where the final entries are the r equals minus 1. So what's a Carty state? Well, a Carty state then is, So I neglected to write down the Ishibashi state, and that's in some sense the most interesting thing to do. Okay, well, I forgot to write it down, but I think I can do it. So let's do the Ishibashi state. Here we have, now we're ready to do it, right? Because we've got our automorphism, we've got our closed string spectrum. What's an Ishibashi state? Well, if we take n equals 0, we see that p left has to be equal to R times P right. On the other hand, if we now look at the closed string spectrum, we see that P left has to be equal to P right. So therefore, we get an Ishibashi state for each eigenvector of eigenvalue 1. And explicitly, the formula is the exponential of minus 1 over n, alpha minus n tilde, acting on the Fock vacuum. So it's a squeezed state. Okay, now let's make the Cardy states. The Cardy states are given by, oh, yes, there should be, absolutely. Thank you. So the Cardy states are given by acting on these states with the modular S matrix. And now comes the point of this talk. Let's try and measure the shape of these states. Okay? So we want to measure these states. What is the shape of these states? In the semi-classical limit. Okay, so what do I mean by that? Well, let's go back to the Fock space here. The Fock space is generated by a highest weight state P, or if you like, a vertex operator, V sub P equals e to the I P x of z, e to the I P x tilde of z bar. And then I act on this with string oscillators. In the long distance limit, which is what I also meant by semi-classical limit, in the long distance limit, I'm going to neglect the oscillators, the closed string oscillators. And so I'm going to replace H closed by L2 of R. Okay, so I'm simply going to think of a closed string state as a little plane wave. And I'm going to make a localized closed string state in the usual way. So the localized graviton state at x will also be a Fourier transform, but not of an Ishibashi state, but just of a graviton plane wave state, P. And now let's ask ourselves, what is the overlap between this localized graviton in space-time and, I better give somebody an X naught, let's call this X naught, and a Cardy state at X. And now you can see that this is equal to a delta function of x minus x naught. Rather, it's proportional to a delta function of x minus x naught. So what does that mean? That means that I'm going to have a brain which is filling part of the space where P has eigenvalue, where R has eigenvalue plus 1, and it's going to be localized in the remaining. Hope I didn't get that backwards. Pardon? And the dimension of the delta function, it's a good question, is either n or d minus n. Right. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to localize it. I'm going to localize the brain in the directions where I can integrate over P, in the r equals plus 1 directions. So this direction here is rn, and this direction here is rd minus n. And this is the brain localized at X naught in this direction. What does X mean? What do you mean? choose X in Rn. Okay. We have an Ishibashi state for every P in this plus one eigenspace. Okay. Now I have X naught here in Rd. And I'll have a delta function for those components of X naught in the n-dimensional direction. And I'll have a infinite volume factor in the other directions. And therefore, I have measured the shape of the brain, and it's just what Polchinski told us. Yeah? This is a very, very confusing point. I almost didn't give this example because of this. There's a funny sign between the open string channel and the closed string channel, which I get confused about every time. I think what I've told you is true, but I wouldn't be shocked if I got the N and the D minus N backwards. Yeah, that was what got me confused. But that's the P in the open, in the closed string channel, and there's an extra sign. Okay, well, you can do this for G equals U1 level K. Skipping a lot of details, the answer turns out to be that the corresponding symmetry-preserving brains are brains localized at theta equals pi n hat over k, where n hat goes from 0 up to 2k. Okay? A completely parallel analysis goes through, where the integrals over p become sums over the discrete momenta. You have an extended chiral algebra, and I think I'm just going to skip that. And I'm going to start the next discussion, but obviously I can't go very far with it because of the time, but it's worth starting the next discussion to make it a little more interesting. So this is the free field case. Now we'd like to talk about the WZW case. So now let's consider the open WZW model for compact group G. Okay, so first in the closed string theory, we have left and right moving currents. J left is DZG G inverse DZ, and J right is minus G inverse D bar Z bar G DZ bar, where I'm going to use. In position space, they're localized, just the way it was localized over here. I mean, you cannot. Okay, if these are symmetry-preserving brains, with respect to the enhanced chiral algebra. Okay. where you include the vertex operators x of z, which exist at radius r squared equals 2k. Okay. Back to WZW theory. So we have the WZW model for a compact group G. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you first and last for today the shape of the brains in the classical theory. And the quantum theory will have to wait for tomorrow. Okay, so classically or quantum mechanically, we have conserved currents here where I'm going to work in Minkowski space. So sigma equals 0 here to sigma equals pi here. And we have time going this way for our open string. And z is t plus sigma, and z bar is t minus sigma. Now, what's the symmetry-preserving boundary condition here? It's j left plus j right sigma component at sigma equals 0 is 0. Okay, now it's a very straightforward exercise. I need to say one more thing. So those are the boundary conditions. Those are the currents. And the general solution of the equations of motion is g of z, z bar, is equal to g left of z times g right of z bar, where g left and g right are arbitrary functions of one real variable. Now, let's take the general solution and let's plug it into our boundary condition, our symmetry-preserving boundary condition, and see what that means for the motion of the endpoint of the string. So what does the question is, what does the boundary condition imply for the motion of the sigma equals 0 endpoint of the string, of the open string? So we substitute our solution into here, and what we discover is that g left prime, g left inverse, plus g right inverse, g right prime, is equal to 0. Now these are both functions of one variable, and at sigma equals 0, z equals z bar equals t. Okay? So they're functions of the same real variable. What does that mean? That implies that g left prime of t is a of t, g left of t, and g right prime of t is minus g right of t times a of t for some matrix valued function a of t. And that implies that g left of t is m of t times g left of 0, and g right of t is g right of 0 times m inverse of t for m the path ordered exponential of a. And that implies that the endpoint of the string g of t moves along g left of t times g right of t, which is equal to m of t, g of 0, m of t inverse. Conclusion, in the classical theory, the end point of the string moves along a conjugacy class. And that could be any conjugacy class, because nobody said anything about g of 0. Tomorrow, we'll see that those conjugacy classes are quantized in the quantum theory. Okay, and we'll see how to measure them by localized gravitons, just the way I did. Then we'll start to rotate them. And that will lead to an interesting question about the D0 charge group. And we'll discover that the D0 charge group has to be torsion. And we'll see what that torsion element is. Okay, thank you.